Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Route, to the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Monday through Friday, anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. It's Tuesday. That means that Andrew Henderson is checking in from the UK. Jay Truitt from downtown Haiti.
Excuse me, waiter. hold the medium rare
Is that Jay Chewitt?
Oh my goodness, right? The problem is, truth is stranger than fiction, right? In places like Haiti. And so if you were going to make up a story about what's going on in Haiti, you probably wouldn't think to go to cannibalism, right? I mean, that just wouldn't be part of the story.
Isn't that the true story?
Yeah, I mean, we'd come up with all kinds of crazy things, but we wouldn't go there. But yet, that's straight where they went to, you know?
Yeah.
You pay your taxes or I'm going to bite your little finger off. You know,
well, I was sharing with you off air against Trent's, you know, rules that I had been to Haiti, although sort of not really. I went on a cruise and there's an island that the Royal Caribbean cruise line own. We were on a celebrity cruise and you go there for the whole day. You get out in the very early in the morning, you leave late at night and you have a barbecue and it's fabulous water sports and everything. And you meet the indigenous population in Haiti.
Right.
And I've got to tell you something, guys. I've got to tell you. I have never met more people who are more black than that. They are so black that it's as dark as Trent's hat. It's that black.
Yeah.
It's jet black.
How was the barbecue?
Now everybody just wants to know the very same question, right? Forget about all the other social injustices that might come up. I just want to know if you had barbecue that you don't know what it was. They have a street taco.
I turned my nose up at my mother-in-law's leg, to be honest. But there you go. Anyway.
I too went to Haiti one time, and I crossed the border from the DR into Haiti, and a fine official from the government took all the money I had in my wallet, turned me around, and sent me back to the DR. So
he promptly went to a barbecue.
Yeah, exactly right.
He didn't take one look at you and say, you look finger licking good, did you? He didn't do that for you.
No. At the time, probably. I was there's just all kinds of things I could probably say there. I didn't look very tasty one way or another.
All right, okay.
I did.
Okay.
The poor gentleman that was traveling with me had his whole life savings in the car, and it was kind of lucky that he didn't take his money. He just took mine. And they turned us around, sent us back, but whatever, it was fine. The Dominican Republic is, has some rough quarters in it, but it's a pretty nice place, honestly, and a pretty civilized society by comparison, considering they share the same island. But it's like, I mean, literally, you know, you flip a switch when you cross that border, and we actually traveled quite a ways into Haiti before we got to the border control point, but that was where we were told.
it brings a whole new meaning to stopping for lunch, doesn't it?
Right. Now it's being delivered in a UN van.
I did watch a very interesting 12-minute piece on the dissertation of the gang leader that's getting all of the attention. He was a police officer within the Haiti system. He got tired of what he was seeing in terms of corruption and went to lead a gang. He defected from being a police officer, went to lead a gang. And despite what our media is telling us, he is garnering a tremendous amount of support in Haiti because he's standing up to a tyrannical leader. So there's more to this whole story than what we're getting.
Yeah,
and,
see, and the other,
obviously we'll always get about we'll get some form of propaganda which makes us not look for the detail.
Well, the interesting thing is if everybody will remember back here, right? It hadn't been that many months ago now, and I can't tell you the month of the year, but it seems like it was at the end of 2022 when all those Haitian immigrants came boiling over and were attempting to enter the United States, and a bunch of them actually ended up coming to the United States. And the Biden administration's response to that was to stop the election, the new election process that was taking place in Haiti. And so now all of a sudden, you know, we're in this mode where the U.S. government stopped an election where very likely this crazed tyrant would have lost. And and would have been defeated and thrown out of power. And that's going to be another one of those kind of black marks on the foreign policy grade card for the Biden administration. But it's kind of funny. They just can't make the right decision sometimes. And I'm not sure what really causes that. At some point, if somebody does the wrong thing every single time and it seems like the obvious wrong decision, then you have to assume that was exactly what they wanted to do.
Right.
So I don't really know what to say other than that. But, you know, the real issue is if you ever sit and listen to somebody that came from Haiti talk about what their life was like before and after. Right. Almost no matter what happens to them after they get to the United States, they will tell you that it was worth it just to get out of there. And the trafficking of children is like at phenomenal rates. Almost no one born in Haiti hasn't had a sibling that disappeared at some point. Right.
Wow.
And
really?
And maybe intentionally, it's almost like a cultural thing there. And so it's just a really sad really sad environment. It's a blight on the whole hemisphere. I don't think there's any place in our hemisphere that operates quite at the level of deterioration that Haiti does. And there may be a pocket somewhere, but not an entire sovereign country that does. And yet, we go down there and they have hurricanes and earthquakes there. It's in the Caribbean and it's on the earthquake side of the Caribbean. And lo and behold, you know, we'll go down there and spend millions and millions and billions of dollars sometimes and rebuild the infrastructure and then just walk off and leave it. You know, we'll help them fix it enough, just barely enough so that they can continue to do what they've been doing all along. And you'd think at some point somebody would just take it over and truly straighten it out. But
hey, just imagine all the Haitians are now going to be working at the Tyson food factories.
I read one of the articles about that. Actually, I was reading it earlier this morning, right? While I was get my first cup of coffee, and it was interesting. The Tyson folks, you know, just bent over backwards to talk about it. But if you come in on one of the approved programs, you bet they have 42,000 of their 120,000. It's down about 1,200 or 1,300 now since they closed the Perry plant, or they're closing the Perry plant. You know, they said we'd hire another 42,000 if we could, but no, make sure they're legal. You know, we'll get them through the government's help. What do they call that?
The asylum
help program,
seeking
asylum. Image program. So as long as they're asylum seekers and they have a stamp on their debit card.
They're good. Remember back in the day when the government would hang out in the packing plants and try to find the illegals? Now they're bringing them to them in buses. How things have changed. It's Roll Route. Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more after this. Let's talk about a domestic supply of beef. Actually, we can call it regional local beef. Great Plains cattlemen working at producing the most tender beef on the planet. I know that because every calf is tested to verify that the tenderness gene is present. It's the myostatin gene. But what you need to know is that you are going to get the most tender eating experience every single time. Full details and how you order the beef at the website, cpbeef.com. You know the best part of the story. You don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. Details, cpbeef.com. Order some today, then send me a note and say, Trent, you were right or wrong. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Andrew Henderson, Jay Truitt. Jay, I want to stay on this a minute because, you know, we often talk about the big four packers, how concentration has taken over the meat packing business, which I don't disagree that it has, but I do disagree because if you go back and read the history of New York City and the meat packing district in the 1880s, there was 80 some meat packers in New York City. And their biggest complaint was the big four have too much control. So nothing has changed in the past 150 years. But this situation with Tyson is perplexing because of the four big packers, two are domestic, Cargill, Tyson, and the other two are foreign owned. And quite frankly, the two that are foreign owned, Brazilian in particular, seem to be more aligned with what the America public needs than the two that are owned by domestic entities. It's very troubling.
It's a, well, I mean, so really, I think the different discussion is that the food system at large in the United States is controlled today or managed today, largely by, say, four different food conglomerates. Tyson is one of those. Cargill is one of those. Lilly is one of those. And then, depending on how you actually look at the rest of it, you get into the whole Kellogg's General Mills circle as well. It's the entire food system, right? And people don't even really think about it, you know, that they're the company that they don't really like those practices, or they wonder how those entities get so much control, but they own virtually every brand in their grocery cart will fall into one of those four categories, right? It's hard to buy soap in the United States without buying from one of those entities, and that same entity also sells you the generic vegetable oil that, you know, you're getting at a discount somewhere. And they're selling you the paper plates that you bought, and the plastic cups, and the orange juice that your kids are drinking is probably packaged in their material, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And same applies to the meat industry. And for me, the issue is not the concentration of the industry itself. That in itself doesn't have to be the evil force to create competition. And I've looked at this like as maybe as hard as a person possibly could for most of my career. And none of the easy answers actually really are the correct answer. Capitalism still matters. I'm a big believer in that. But by the same token, we kind of have the government playing a referee in a process that actually feeds concentration. And
do you not have a monopolies commission in the United States?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, sure we have them. And they've taken on, you know, let's be honest, right? Is there a monopoly in the production of, say, like computers? There's more profitability in the computer industry than there is in the food industry in most occasions. And so do we have that? Sure, we do. Right. And we have competition between the whole Apple world and the PC world. And then inside the PC world, which has the lion's share of the market, you have maybe six big major players, and you have some foreign entities that are involved in that too. And the Europeans threw a fit about that, the way they came into their market. But in the United States, that battleground just sways back and forth, and they all have to kind of prove their entity. But we haven't seen them really gather up other things inside that business that
right.
made it impossible to do business with anybody but them. And I can't really find the magic solution that did that. But I watched, I've sat with the attorneys at the Department of Justice that were responsible for reviewing these cases. And when both pro and con, when I wanted to be able to see a merger or an acquisition take place and when I didn't. And I wasn't there really to express my opinion about either. It was just to listen and watch the process. But I've sat literally across a small table from those guys. And you can tell from the moment it begins that they already know how they're going to rule.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before they ever start the investigation. They're good people, but the system seems to be pre-programmed to allow certain things to happen and not. And for the life of me, I can't tell you what that is. There's nobody getting paid under the table. Those guys were living in the same house I was at the time, right? And I wasn't getting paid under the table.
That house in Haiti somehow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And the one in Puerto Rico.
Hey,
apart from the house in Haiti, Andrew, in Puerto Rico, Missouri, and the house in Texas.
Speaking of Tyson Foods, Andrew. There's a footprint of Tyson Foods in the UK. I'm wondering how big it is. BRF in Vecca. Is it on? Do you know anything about it?
No. But that doesn't mean it isn't a form of monopoly like it is in the US, because if it's pork we're talking about, I have very little to do with pork, although I do know that the pork distribution is in very few hands in the UK.
Okay, so first of all, Tyson's the largest chicken provider handler in the United States. Biggest, I think, is in a beef standpoint. I think they're bigger than JBS Swift in the U.S. Jay, so it's not just pork; it's all three entities. But
yeah.
Tyson Foods is in every single part of the food business.
Well, I may well be proved wrong. It's not a name that's come to my attention, but there are other names like ABP, which is the beef side of things. They're the biggest beef slaughterers, or Scotch Beef itself, which is based in just outside Glasgow. But I'd be very, very surprised if you're not right. I mean, it sounds like, you see, if you're generic with the way you sell produce, then it sounds like it's very difficult for even the consumer to know
absolutely who it is.
The actual supplier is. So there you are. I mean, they're obviously found a way of doing it. I mean, I am very worried about too few people handling our food. I think that is a huge, huge threat to society. When they'll use their power, I don't know. But that power is there to be used at some point, isn't it? Especially if they're on the globalist ideology of reducing the population.
Well, I want to go back and ask something, because I'm not for sure. Did you say that Tyson owns BRF?
Yeah, they do in the UK.
So I didn't know that. Right? I mean, BRF's literally one of the largest food companies in the world by anybody's standard. And when you get outside of, I mean, in Brazil, their pork and poultry influence is, I mean, South America, period, is huge, right? But
yeah,
they operate a bunch of facilities in the UAE, they're in the Netherlands, Malaysia, Turkey, that whole part of the world, right? They have a giant presence, actually. They have as many employees as what Tyson does, I would bet. They've got to. I mean, they're somewhere. I know they're like in that 100,000 or 120,000, and that's Tyson says they have 120 today, minus 1,200 in Iowa.
Tell me that. Does that not mean that same relationship may well be in place in America as well, or not?
BRF doesn't really have a presence in the United States.
They don't have to. They have Tyson. It's all Tyson.
Again, why? Yeah, they wouldn't need to.
What I was implying,
and now I'm going to have to do a little work myself, but it'd be interesting because BRF may have the ability to really own Tyson. It may be where the slave owns the master, or something like that. And maybe that was again.
We've been here before where we've realized that, for example, some of your big breweries are actually owned by an even bigger entity that's not American owned. So that's possible, isn't it?
Actually, when Jay was talking about the whole food pyramid that's owned by 3G Capital, Heinz, and all of those food companies, Kellogg's, all of those. They own Anheuser-Busch and all of those beer companies that you're talking about as well. They own 28% of the global beer sales. That's all the same company. We got to go to a break. We're halfway through Roll Route. We'll be back with more after this. Greg Hager Music will move your soul. Country Music Entertainer of the Year. Writes all of his own songs. Check him out online, greghager.com. Order your album today. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson. And the whole consolidation, it bothers me more than it does you, apparently, Jay. But truth of the matter is, you can look to government to fix it. As long as people flock to and don't care who the owners are of where they buy their food and beverage and all of their essentials, it doesn't matter. It's on the consumer's back.
And that was the only clear conclusion that I came to after years of trying to figure out exactly how to do it without causing as much harm as good, right? That really is the problem. When you start trying to figure out how to break up entities that came together for economic reasons or market access reasons, et cetera, the problem when you undo that is that they tend to fall apart and fail, right? And you have to look outside the food business because the U.S. has kind of erred on the side of food security always, right? Always if they could do it. But consumers decide who wins. The reason that Apple products cost twice as much as PC products is because consumers were willing to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Apple has a flat out Squarespace in the marketplace. Not everyone wants to buy a Mercedes versus a Malibu, right? But the people on both ends of that spectrum or the both sides of that equation have decided that they would and why, right? And consumers dictated it. But yet in the food business, the government has, much like it has in the banking industry and other things, right? They've created this environment where in order to win, you have to do it the government way. And we're watching what happens in the government way. I mean, the whole story about Tyson, there's nothing, they didn't do anything that's against the law.
No.
They actually followed the law maybe more closely than anybody else. You know, I'll even say this, right? I would defend the fact that maybe the Perry plant needed to be closed at 61 years old, and packing plants, just because they're 61 years old doesn't mean that they're efficient or that they were profitable or productive, right? I can only say that I don't know, but I can see where it's possible that facility just didn't operate profitably, and they shouldn't be forced to keep it open to serve my interest if it doesn't also serve their interest to some degree. But the big but here is that the problem is that we've created this scenario where consumers literally across the country are going to make a choice, and they're going to pick that Tyson label because to them it has a value, and their marketing dollars are massive, and so there's no repercussions for the company, right? I mean, not really, not in the consumer marketplace. I doubt you'll see Tyson.
Well, not unless they stop
demand
buying.
Drop.
Yeah, not unless they stop buying their products.
That's the only thing that talks.
But they can't stop buying their products because they don't even know what they are. They have so many different brands. And when you break it down to the farm level, let me just give an example that I'm personally involved in, is that Tyson owns IBP. IBP used to be Iowa Beef Packers. It was at one time the largest beef purveyor in the United States. But Tyson IBP also owns Heinhold Hog Market. Heinhold Hog Market is in the business of buying sows from farmers and primarily sells them to two or three different sausage makers. The number one sausage maker in the United States, Jimmy Dean, owned by Tyson Foods.
Yeah.
And so I sell my sows to Parks Livestock, which is completely independent from everybody, Tyson and everybody else. But who do they sell the sows to once I sell them to them? Jimmy Dean.
Heinhold.
You can't just walk away from it. You can't. It will take so long to unpeel this onion that you couldn't even believe it.
So if you look, I'm just, again, that just reinforces, I think, my point, which is if you think the change is going to be driven from the production side, which is designed to try to get the best price that it can today. Not every day, right? But today, or 10 years from now, then we have proven since your example in the 1880s that system only leads to what we have today.
Yeah.
The consumers, on the other hand, can actually flip the system, but they're not inclined to do it because they buy, in today's world, they just buy the marketing.
Yeah, they buy on price.
Well, hang on. Whoa. Just stop there, because can we look at sometimes that does change. Let's just look at some examples of that. Look at your Piedmontese beef, Trent. I know it's going to be less than 1% of the sales, but there are more and more products that have come out into the market. Wagyu beef being another one. You can start to look at your niche pork markets, your niche microbreweries. All the time, there's still new businesses that at some point these large conglomerates will try and gobble up. But there is always the potential for somebody to find something so groundbreaking that, like Apple, you completely take over a market. And it's still there. That opportunity is still there. If the consumer wants something that they can't buy and all of a sudden it becomes available to them, that still prevails in business, doesn't it? I mean, we still see those success stories.
So, Andrew, 26,000 head of cattle go through the certified Piedmontese system every year. 26,000 head. We raise and market 28 million head of beef cattle a year. So if you divide 26,000 by 28 million, it's point. 0.0009.
But how many Piedmonteses are there? That's what I'm trying to say. Is there
not many?
There'll be lots of local beef and products that are sold into the market. I'm just saying that we do see
it's still less than 1% of the total.
I think I agree mostly with Andrew, though, and again, because in a different way, I think he and I are saying the same thing. Consumers make the decision. If Piedmontese, let's just talk about them as an example, right? Because when they first came here, they they didn't have a reputation for tenderness, right? That wasn't their the reason that people imported them initially. They were big, growthy animals, and they added frame score, and they added some other factors into the genetic pool.
Yield,
right? And so, but somewhere in the process, they identified a consumer trait. And that is the reason that you sold 28,000 of them instead of 2,800 of them, right? Yeah. And so, I do think that they deliver a superb consumer product, right? It's not a discount product. It's not the wholesale market product.
Well, can I just give you an example of
consumers made that happen?
Give me a much bigger example than that. Walmart, your Walmart, tried to push into the UK market, so they bought Asda, which was one of our low-end supermarket chains, and tried to replicate what they were doing in America with the stack it high and sell it cheap approach to the consumer. They've left the UK with their tails because they didn't make a success of it here. And what I'm trying to say to you is that the ones that survived, Waitrose and Sainsbury's, were much higher market, more choice of different types of offering in terms of food. And I'm just telling you that sometimes when you think the big conglomerate is always going to win, that's when they actually lose. They don't always win. And I think that I'll give you another example. Your four beef companies in the 18th century are four different companies now. They will be. They won't be the same origin company.
I agree. No, I absolutely agree with that. And see, that was always my issue on the concentration issue inside the meat industry, is that we've done about all together like six breakup sessions, right? Trying to break down bigger players or penalize them in some way. Even if we didn't really force them to break up, we didn't allow them to expand, or et cetera, et cetera. And the truth of the matter is, about every 15 years, then it's really the only company that's lasted in the beef business over the last 40 years is Cargill. And at the right. And if you look, they were the last entrant into the Big Four, and their whole secret sauce was that they figured out how to actually integrate a bunch of internal systems in a plant. But I would guess at some point, right, to Andrew's point, we'll see four different companies take over. And
well, it's like this, and I'll give you another example.
Same thing for beer, same thing for cars.
Well, I don't know whether you two are noticing this in the US, so, because I didn't see enough of the US to make this assumption. But here, Jeff Bezos and Amazon are leaving a very nasty taste in the mouth of the consumer, because they are realizing on a daily basis how it has destroyed the town centers all over the UK. Now, I don't know whether you've experienced that, but we're experiencing that now. And I know a number of people that are starting to say, do you know what? I'm not buying from Amazon. And I think that'll intensify, because you do gravitate to where you can talk to people, where you can have some social interaction. If that gets taken away, like, I think Amazon takes it completely away from you. And you can also see that people who start up businesses get taken on by Amazon, and then they copy that business and turf the original business out. People are seeing that, and I think that in the next 5 to 10 years, Jeff Bezos needs to make an awful lot of money out of wind turbines and solar panels, because he's going to struggle with his business. It's called business.
We have to take a break. We'll be back with the last segment, Roll Route, and pick it up right there with Amazon and Walmart after this. Let's talk about maintaining pests for a moment. If you want to brag about being the best, you're going to use the Apache sprayer, because it will minimize the pest in your fields, whether that be weeds, insects, or quite possibly just a little fertilizer application. It all involves an Apache sprayer. Simpson Farm Enterprises in the southern half of the Great Plains does a great job in the reliability, but follow through with the service. Get more details about the Apache sprayer and what Simpson can do with you from Nebraska south, including Colorado, simpsonfarm.com. If you're Welcome back. Roll Route, Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson, Trent Luce, and I'll just pick up where Andrew left off. There are a ton of people in the United States, and the first one to recognize that, or the first place people shop that they recognized that, was Walmart. That it destroyed Main Street. It destroyed all those locally owned businesses. And yet, as they recognized it, Andrew, they continued to go there because it was convenient. I see the same thing happening with Amazon. People recognize that it's not good for the United States. It's not good for the community, but it is convenient, so we keep doing it.
Yep.
Price matters.
Price is a controlling factor. That's a giant hurdle to get over, right? Not just price, but a price value equation. And I would say, so I've had a lot of interaction with Amazon at different times in my life, and I've never been dissatisfied, never, with what I got for what I paid for, right? And I've even had, you know, whether it be, I mean, really across all fronts. But I agree. I've also would have to say that my Walmart experiences are not the same, but it's because there I have to actually see the people that are making the same decision I am, and it makes me wonder if I'm just like them. And so... you can see everything at a Walmart that you can see at the state fair, right?
It must be very difficult walking around a Walmart looking at all these other Jay Truitts. It must drive you crazy.
Yeah, no, actually, right? I stopped going to Walmart for exactly that reason.
Yeah,
I just looked around.
You're afraid that birds of a feather flock together, so you're flying in different routes. That's what you're telling us.
I'm scared to death that somewhere in the mix, I'm going to walk out of the store wearing a pair of really tight, stretchy pants that are two sizes too small. And now, what happens then, you know? And in a fight out in the parking lot over whether my cart made it into the right little spot.
So, you'll probably get a place on Biden's top table if you did that. I mean, you'd be the minister for the head of agriculture for sure if you
that is,
became...
I could probably be the, commerce secretary, yeah.
If you became Jane Truitt, that'd be it. Jane Truitt, and then shave the beard off and grow your hair a bit longer, and then get some correctional surgery
and get a boob job. Yeah,
yeah. I kind of have one of those already, right? So I'm gonna keep the beard and just re-identify, right? I don't know.
Oh my goodness!
No, I think though, you know, the big conversation is about. Consumers do what consumers do, you know, and again, listen, most of the time on this show, we spend all of our time talking about political issues and what drives people's perspective on policy usually is the marketing that comes at them, right? The narratives that they get told. The reason we have a climate debate in the world is because some people were really effective at marketing the climate issue. The same thing on almost every front that you talk about. And
you're spot on.
And so why would food be different? Why would food be any different?
But that's why I say a great marketing hook can change a market immediately. I saw in the United Kingdom, there was a company called Golden Wonder who were the number one crisp manufacturer. Yours in your country, I think, is Lay's. And I saw overnight a company wipe them out with fantastic marketing, and that company was called Walkers. And the number one crisp became number two, and then they just went out of existence because they lost their market on packaging and marketing. And I think that can happen again and again and again. There'll be another Apple. Think about your Nokia phones. When do you see a Nokia phone now?
Yeah, right.
When do you see a Samsung phone?
At one point, all of us had them. Right. No, I agree.
Yeah.
And that's, you know,
I think I have a Samsung phone, by the way.
Yeah, but honestly, though, surprising. Right? We'll sit here and we'll talk about, you know, whether in the Ford F-150, but drive around to construction sites in the city where I live, and you see a whole bunch of Toyota Tundra, right?
Et cetera.
There's a million examples of that.
Ford car company has almost disappeared from the UK. 10 years ago, number one vehicle.
Yeah.
Now, it wouldn't be in the top 20. And that is unbelievable when you think about that. The German companies have actually taken complete control of that sector of the market. And it's really interesting because at one point we had a big number of Japanese cars in the UK. But now the number one vehicles in the UK are 100% German, really. That's where all the premium business is.
Well,
I pulled
up to a job site yesterday, and a young lady was there, involved in the industry, and she just bought a brand new vehicle, and it turns out it was one of the new Korean makers' cars. Oh, right? I won't give them any props, but I looked at that vehicle and I thought, man, that thing looks like a Range Rover, right? I mean, like so many ways, it's not even funny. And then the reality is, I bet there's 10 of those Korean models sold for every one of the Range Rovers that are sold. And listen, people will have all kinds of reasons why, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying that consumer marketing is consumer marketing, and we haven't figured that out in the food business. I don't know. Part of the problem is that the people producing the food are not the people that are really directing consumer dollars, consumer marketing dollars for the most part. That's not a discussion about checkoffs and all of that, right? That's a whole different discussion. I'm talking about the real advertising dollars on television, social media, print, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and all the events that they sponsor. Those big companies figured out how to win the battle. And if you're going to tell me that a Tyson pork chop tastes different than a Cargill pork chop, you got to explain it to me, right? Now, if you told me let's take it to the beef business. If you want to tell me that a random old mixed steer from somewhere that finally made it through the feed system and got processed and turned into steaks, that you can't, that you won't notice the difference between that steak and that Piedmontese steak that I can order from Trent, well, then you're just stupid. You ought not eat steaks if you can't tell the difference between those two steaks, right? Because there's a decisive difference in the quality and et cetera, et cetera. But two of the meat sectors, we've lost that. Now, to your point as well, Andrew, there are you can also go, and I can buy a pork chop from Trent now, and it's going to taste different. It's going to taste different than that Tyson pork chop that I just went generically down here to whatever my pick the chain, because we have them all available.
Piggly Wiggly sounds
respect,
like a nice one.
Like,
yeah, Piggly Wiggly is a good sound.
It's like when I brought the real cheddar cheese over to the US. As soon as people taste it, they go, "Oh, they've never tasted cheddar like that before." Well, once somebody sees that that's available, it changes the game, doesn't it?
Yeah, and most people said, man, that's almost as good as Gouda.
Yeah.
Pants on fire. Pants on fire, Mr.
So I want to speak just a moment to marketing before we lose the clock, and that is that my brother was an engineer in the automobile sector, and he always told me the most American-made pickup on the road today is a Toyota Tundra. And yet, how many people buy a Ford or a Chevy because they think they're buying an American product, when in fact the Toyota Tundra was the one that was most assembled in the United States?
Yeah, made right up the road.
That happens a lot.
Setting right now.
That happens a lot. I mean, the Range Rover is actually produced in India now.
Yeah.
So, you start thinking there's so many things that you're right, Trent. We have a lot of Toyotas produced here in the UK as well.
Yeah. I don't think Mercedes really are made in North Carolina, right? But my point is, it's not even, I'm not talking about like the nationality of that item as much as I'm talking about the how that product got consumer acceptance and preference. And there's like a few key ingredients into that mix, right? And it's kind of like, how did Piedmontese get the market segment that they have? Well, they had a great guarantee on tenderness. Mm-hmm. Their product actually lived up to the expectation. Effectively, they were warrantying the product, and they sold it at a price point that people got what they expected for. And they got the quality that they expected for. It's not a discount product. It's a premium product. Right. And so you expect it to have a premium taste, flavor, and cookability that most of us can't screw it up too well and too easily. And so it works. Right. And that I think the problem is, again, here's where we're falling into the trap that we always criticize people for falling into the trap. We're asking government to fix this problem. And government won't fix the problem.
No, they make
government
it worse.
Government only knows how to manage problems, and if best, make it worse. At best, make it worse, if not, make it disastrous. So how do you fix it? Walker takes over the
Lay's chip market. But that will be the last word of the day. We've successfully journeyed down the path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson, I'm Trent Luce. All three of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route. Tremendous Free Soil Coalition meeting last night, but what happened at the high school yesterday is going to be a focus point for me for quite some time. I was speaking to 100 students at York High School. I asked them across the board, how many of you think subsidies are a good idea? Most of them raised their hand, quite frankly. One young lady said, what's a subsidy? Which allowed me to explain what a subsidy is. And then I explained the debt clock. And I explained that every one of them owed the federal government $105,000 right now. And it's growing. Guess what? By the time I got done, there was only about four thought subsidies were a good idea. How you educate students is what matters. Free Soil Coalition does it well. FreeSoilCoalition.com.